In this week, on the 2nd of September 1986, Dennis Wise's first league goal was enough to beat Cholton and leave the Dons top of the First Division table.
I
There
remember it
were just
well.
3 minutes of normal time remaining when the 19-year-old Southampton reject was on hand to bundle the ball home from close range after Jones had blocked John Fashanu's effort. All the experts wrote them off before the start of the season, said Alex boss Lenny Lawrence. But I can tell you, it takes some effort and commitment to match them. Commitment, effort, going against the odds. It's the old Wimbledon way. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Hello, hello, dear listener, and welcome to the Same Old Wombles. Last week, we tried a little experiment, which was to commentate and do our show at the same time. We're not falling for that mistake again, even though we're recording this at the same time. Wimbledon are currently being humbled by Stevenage. Anyhow, today I'm delighted to be joined by mon frere, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
All right, Matty, not too bad.
Good, good. And the producer, the man with the buttons, Dr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you? How's work?
Well, I'm just getting back into the swing of things, so I'm slightly tired. Slightly not used to the pace of actually going to the office every day, but there we go. I'll
That's
be all
fantastic.
Right.
And actual fact, Adam, just before we came on air, you showed me something. You'd be given a new present. Can you just show Mark what your new present is? Because I think he's going to appreciate this more than anyone.
Oh, yeah. He's going to love it, actually. I've come into my home office, stroke den, and randomly on the side, I've been gifted a Muppets alarm clock.
Quite impressive. It's the wrong colours. Yeah, red and green, not yellow and blue. But yeah, it's quite impressive indeed.
If there's someone...
I don't know where it's come from.
If there's someone who knows all about Muppets, it's our... football guru, the man with all the Wimbledon knowledge. Hello, Mr. Tall Mark Lewis. How are you?
I'm very good. Well, I say I'm very good. I'm glad to be on the pod. I can't believe you let your brother get away with no mentions about Peru as yet. Man who went halfway
Working
across the
in.
World and then still tried to send us random WhatsApp messages about football matches. And then protested that we didn't send him any messages because we were playing so well against Barnsley.
Yeah.
The thing that makes me laugh is Matthew always asks us how we're doing. We're middle-aged guys who are always going to say, it's all good. It's all fine. We're never going to admit when it isn't.
Yeah,
there's not enough time for us to go down that route.
I was going to say, I woke up far too early this morning. And, you know, that's a bit of an age thing and you know, a bladder thing. But apart from that, the world is all right. And I don't care about the virtuous, unvirtuous B-team boycott cup. And therefore, as it would appear that our players don't as well, whether or not Jackson does, I'm not sure. But he's at the moment, our half time, I believe it is. And it's currently
AS
Wimbledon 1 and a team from St. Evenich 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just let's make it clear, Mark is not
going to
talk about
the game because that didn't work last week, so I'm definitely not going to do that.
That was a failed experiment.
Do you not want me to tell you then?
No, don't tell us.
Mark,
like, it doesn't
me.
Work.
Yeah.
All right, I'll put it in the chat so that no one actually on the podcast knows, even though...
We'll know. We'll all know. Yeah, that was. We apologise, dear listener, but we thought, you know, we might be the same old Wombles, but we like to try new things, mix up a little bit, you know. But this week we're back to normal. We've got a few things to chat about.
Can I just say before we start chatting that I definitely remember that game against Charlton, mainly because, and this is definitely a same old Wombles type quote. The Valley used to have a massive terrace behind the goal. And in those classic old days, that even Wimbledon wouldn't take that many people across Actually, no, what I'm talking about, it wasn't
the
Valley.
It was Sellers Park, yeah.
It was Sellers had it before. Yeah. I believe they built Sainsbury's, or it might have been the Homestyle that is now.
It was the Homestyle, and it was terraced, wasn't it?
I definitely remember being like bundled down that terrace when Wyre scored with about 3 minutes left.
Oh, like it was the most beautiful moment. I think if you go into the main entrance of the club and you've got all the different pictures on the wall, there's one there which is the picture of Bassett sitting underneath the framed picture of the league table with us top of the league. I know we were top of the league after three, but I think we were still there after four or five games. I think it was four at Charlton.
We were still there after five because we beat Watford 1-0 away.
Yeah. That's our prime time, dear listener. That you're talking prime, same old Wobbles time, mid-80s. That was our moments. Great. It was just brilliant. That was fantastic. What a great first season that was for us. Anyhow, we weren't having to play sides like Bradford at that moment. We did play them on Saturday, and it was frustrating. And I think we do blame Nick Draper for this fact that he gave us from the 9 years podcast that I think we hadn't conceded a goal in the first half. And then we scored one and we conceded one in the first half at Bradford. And
I think the difference, my friend, is not that stat or indeed any other podcast host mentioning it, but actually the fact that we went to a team which, if we're all honest,
yes,
we expected to lose against. My score prediction was 2-0. I thought this would be the first game of the season that we'd actually get totally found out overall, and Bradford would be too big and too quick and too almost bully us, frankly, which they didn't, from what I can gather. But we actually took the game to them. Just a quick sort of recap, first of all, to the Barnsley game, which we obviously spoke about a little bit last week. But one fascinating comment I remember from the quick sort of family chat after Barnsley game was, I was so impressed, and I was saying as we were walking out of the ground, I was so impressed that we'd gone toe to toe with them, with that kind of team. To which the rest of my family said, "No, we didn't, because Barnsley didn't go toe to toe with us, because we actually took the game to them."
Yep.
But it does appear that genuinely we tried to go toe to toe with Bradford. Unfortunately, we also managed to get two of the worst defensive howlers into the same game, which obviously contributed to effectively us gifting them two goals.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is there was a penalty. Wasn't there a penalty decision? No, that was in the week. Sorry, that was the cup game. I'm getting confused. But I mean, I think we had chances. We had chances to go further ahead in against Bradford. So when it was 2-1, I think we had a chance to go 3-1. And when it was 2-0, we had a chance to go 3-2. So I know Jackson was really upset, and I think we were quite like his passion. I mean, he's really annoyed about losing, and I think it's because we've been playing so well, better than we expected, to be honest with you. So it's been fantastic. And I liked, Matty Smith's goal to make it 2-1 to us. I think he's gone past Nerfell and said a word or two, hasn't he? If you look back on the clips,
really?
And it was a
I
great.
Didn't see that.
To be fair to Nerfell,
there was nothing. You know, I think there didn't seem to be anything on Bradford fans' chat relating to Nerfell. There was nothing from Nerfell in terms of trying to wind any of our players up. Yes, he celebrated with them afterwards, but you'd expect that. And actually, I thought possibly it could be one of those chickens coming home to roost. In terms of him being able to outshine us, but actually the goals they scored, I don't seem to feel were anything particularly down to what he did or what he didn't do.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and I think it was one of those games. It's weird, isn't it? Now we get into this position, we're playing against a side I think are going to be up near the top end of the table. They've invested so much money over the summer; they've put in loads into it. I think they'll be up near the top, and yet we've matched them all the way. And I think it's a testament to how we were all feeling when I was feeling sick after that game. It's really annoying. It's one of those ones that sort of like shook my mood a little bit on Saturday evening.
Because you believe we could get something out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
being
when
two
you're
one
two
up,
one
yeah.
up, when you're two one up, you kind of think, right, you've got to get something out of it, really. And you know, that's the point. So like all the rest of you, I was kind of going, well, we're going to get nothing out of this game beforehand. But then when you're 2-1 up with a, you know, with a bit to go, you kind of think, do you know what, we're going to do something here.
You
so
think
it's,
we
that's
should
what
all know better,
frustrated.
though?
Of course I should know better, but you know,
Well, I mean,
it's the hope that kills you, isn't it?
but I think our recent thing is the fact, you know, over the last season, we were giving away goals, and we've continued to do this thing of giving away goals in the last 10 minutes. Nye, I think you were saying, weren't you, that if the games were 10 minutes shorter, we'd been up near the top. So that
would be unbeaten.
Yeah, this is a lovely stat that people try and roll out from last season. I think over about 50 games last season, it happened about four times. So, yes, we're playing at a high level, and potentially the teams are sharper or fitter. Or just look at the type of caliber of people that Bradford brought on.
Yeah.
They brought on Sarcevic, they brought on Nick Powell, and they brought on somebody else, all of whom have either played in the Championship or 100-plus games in League One. That's the type of thing we're competing against. And unfortunately, the B-team game that we're not watching right now, but the result of the B-team game, is showing us the paucity of the lack of quality of our non-first-choice 11.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it is interesting. It's worrying in a way because, you know, we're looking at people like Brodie Hughes, who's come in. He's come in since our last podcast, and I know he played in when we were away. I think he played some preseason friendlies. And Patrick Bauer, who's come in as well. So you'd have thought that we'd be quite tight at the back, you know.
Except that back four that are playing tonight, or back five rather, Hughes right wing back, Sassi left wing back. Enough said about him, the better, unfortunately. Yeah. And Bauer playing in centre, so back in the middle of a back three with Riley Harbottle and Riley Horan, who is an 18-year-old making his debut. And I think we've got to be honest and realistic about that type of thing. And of course, it's Stevenage's you know, backup squad team as well, but. You know, Horn's learning the hard way. Horn at the moment is on loan at Walton and Hersham. So I find these loans quite interesting. Harry Sidwell's gone to Dagenham in the conference. And Josh Collins gone out. We can talk about that a little bit later, but he's gone to Woking in the conference. Everybody else is still at Ryman Premier level. So you're asking Horan now, even in a minor cup competition, as an 18-year-old, to make his debut, having probably only trained once or twice, and certainly Hughes only trained once or twice with us, and play alongside more experienced campaigners, but play against seasoned professionals.
Yeah.
And I'd rather this happened. No one wants to lose heavily in any game, but if it has to happen, then let's make sure it happens in this kind of game rather than in front of, you know, 18,000 baying home fans as there would have been at Bradford. It was at Oggs, wasn't it? There's a famous photograph of somebody, I think it was at Bradford actually, screaming in Oggs's face when they managed to equalise.
Yeah.
And let's see how much he's come on in the 18 months, two years since that photograph was taken. Yeah. Fingers crossed Horn will as well, because I believe he's an 18-year-old who's in like youth squads for the Republic of Ireland. So, you know.
I mean, we got some great, I mean, I think everyone was saying about in the cup game last week, Junior and God coming on and doing really well. And I know that he's gone out on loan as well to Chelmsford. And he's on the bench tonight.
And Keng has gone out on loan to Chelmsford. And he's already played twice. He played last night, actually, because they play on Mondays for some random reason.
Yeah.
But interestingly, they're playing him as a winger because he is a winger, not a wingback.
But it's great. It's great we've got these players out on experience. I mean, the interesting, so we've done our business now. The transfer window is closed. We've done all the business. And I think it looks like we've got a fairly decent, I don't know what, 15, 16. We've got a fairly decent squad, I think. Probably one of the strongest squads we've had for a while. I'm wondering if we missed out on any business. I think we're all pleased for Josh that Josh Kelly gets a chance to go and prove himself at Woking, which I think is fantastic. I feel a little bit for him, to be honest with you. But I can understand, it makes sense. I was interested that Sass didn't get a loan move. I thought he might have got a loan move, to be honest with you. And I do wonder if we missed out on someone, because I think there's still a... I think in an ideal world, you'd be looking at potentially three players, you know, a cover up left, cover maybe for Reeves, you know, that centre mid place.
No, I think there's those places, you know, that we are missing, for sure. I don't think we missed out on any business. I just don't think we can afford to get those players in, and probably the players that we can afford potentially wouldn't have been able to step up to the place that we need. So I think it's probably a budget constraint issue at this point, actually.
I mean, we've actually, including obviously the players we re-signed, we actually in the transfer window signed 10 players over the summer, which in general terms, apart from sort of turnover in non-league days, I think is relatively unprecedented. You know, Alistair Smith, Steve Seddon, Delano McCoy-Splatt, Joe McDonnell, Nathan Bishop, Nathan Simway, Antoine Hackford, some bloke called Orsi, who can take penalties apparently, Patrick Bauer and Brody Hughes. Now, none of us have seen Hughes play. He did play against Millwall. I thought he actually looked, considering obviously he was just on trial, in inverted commas, at that point. He looked one of the few defenders there that night, even though he was not part of the first team squad regularly, who knew what they were doing. And Millwall cut us apart that day on a pre-season friendly. I don't know that, obviously different players in different positions, but I don't know that any of those players, that Kelly, for example, gets in ahead of any of those players. As soon as Hackford came in and Hackford made the impression,
I think
that probably told you everything you need to know about Kelly's chances of success.
I agree. And I know that he's a different player to Orsi, but is he any worse than that, to be honest with you? But I think it seems to be decent. It seems to be decent business. Niall, what's your thoughts?
You know, I think we've done all right. I mean, I'm like, the Orsi thing we've talked about.
Yeah.
That's the one that just kind of got me a little bit. I mean, I think we're a far improved team than we were last season, which says a lot considering, you know, we lost Tilly and we lost Nerfield, and people were kind of really worried about that. But, you know, I think we're looking more balanced, we're looking stronger, and we're looking like we're up for it, which is far better than I would have anticipated when we started the season. So, you know, I look at those three defeats and you kind of go, well, in a way, were we robbed in all three? Which is a brilliant position to be in, isn't it? To think, you know,
I wouldn't say we were robbed against Cardiff. We were unfortunate to concede the way we did when we did, but we weren't robbed.
All right. Do you know, but the point being is that, like, we've put in a good performance against all of them, and we could have easily got more points than we have.
That's what's been quite exciting. Yeah. That's the thing. That's what's been quite exciting, is that I don't think we were expecting anything this season. I think we thought we were going to really, really struggle. And then, yeah, when we go to Bradford and it's quite exciting, the stuff is happening, you're thinking, oh, okay, hang on a minute. And that's the thing. I mean, my concern is that we need to turn those points around at the beginning of the season, because I don't know how we're going to last the whole season, because we don't have a massive squad. It's pretty well covered. We have an insanely small budget, you know, so I think that's probably why I was a bit disappointed, because I thought, I was like, wow. And I put on the chat, the WhatsApp, I was like, we've got no money and we don't care, at the point we were winning, because I thought, this is amazing. We're beating squads that are so much bigger value. But then obviously...
I think it's relative in a way. I've always thought this, because my sense is, if you had to buy the team we have now, would we be able to afford it? You know, because I think the value of the players has gone up. I mean, even players like Hackford, I think he's probably, even in the short time he's been with us, he's probably doubled in value.
Yeah, no,
I think there's a lot of, we might not on paper have that much, but I think how the value of our squad now is quite good. And you know,
which makes it worrying for January, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's you know, there's some great things that, you know, I always think it's a privilege. We've got Ryan Johnson's been called up to the Northern Ireland squad. And I think that's what a fantastic thing. I was half expecting Joe Lewis to get a call up to the Welsh squad. I think that's fantastic, and I think that's all about, you know, how much we've come on. And also the other thing I wanted to say was, do we think that actually JJ is a League One manager? I mean, he proved himself when he was at Charlton, so he kind of knows this league and he knows what's for it.
Whereas I'm liking what he's doing. I'm liking the subs. League Two, I'm liking that stuff.
Yeah. League Two, he had to sort of like find stuff out a bit. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't his actual league. So I think JJ's doing a great job at the moment. I mean, the next few games are going to be very interesting because, you know, Bolton, if it happens, and I didn't know whether, Mark, I don't know if you know this at all. Have Bolton got any players called up? Is this game still happening?
The game definitely still happening. I think even we wouldn't actually try and arrange coach hire to a game that wasn't happening. No, I was told anecdotally that there were going to be some international call-ups. Having said that, Omar has not been called up by Lebanon, which obviously would have been a second call-up for us. So in that regard, it doesn't look like it. I think Bolton have lost one, possibly two. We've obviously lost Johnson. But then you imagine that Harbottle would slide in again alongside Oggs and Lewis. And, you know, the injury that Lewis had doesn't appear to have necessarily impeded him. Frankly, certainly the errors on Saturday were not down to Lewis. They were unfortunately down to Bishop. But again, fair play to Bishop. You don't see a lot of the players on social media, but Bishop did come out and hold his hand up and basically say, you know, that wasn't his greatest day. He made a couple of mistakes. And as is the way, the higher the level you play at, the more likely that the mistake will get punished straight away.
But it's interesting.
Matt, let me add from that. So I was reading a few like stuff from Bolton fans. Bolton are likely to have had three or four call-ups, but the time limit for when you can call the game off is the Sunday before. So that's passed. So the game's on, but Bolton will be without a number of their key first choice players.
Well, there we go. We at the Samo Wombles, we like to bring you exclusives. I don't know how we get these exclusives, but thank you, Niall, for bringing that in. Yeah, that's yeah. Well, let's not get too excited. I mean, I'm wondering, does Bauer get in that squad on Saturday, or you're thinking Harbottle, Oggs and Lewis rather than Bauer in there?
I mean, Bauer gets in the squad because he's the only other fit centre back, frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, he hasn't played for a while. He didn't play very much at Preston. From what we can understand, that was because he didn't fit into manager's plans as opposed to he was actually injured or injury prone.
Yeah.
And he looked fine the game I saw last week for the hour or so he played. So I'd say in general terms, he's got to play himself in to be match fit. Yeah. And what better way to do that in a meaningless EFL Trophy game?
Yeah. Well, we're not going to mention that. But unless there's some miracle, anyhow. But I'm made up for Ryan Johnson. I think it's fantastic. I think he's been playing. I would argue that up until this moment, he's been one of our players of the season. I think he's been fantastic. And as for Bishop, I find it a weird one because I still think he's a great goalkeeper. And he pulled off that great save against McGoldrick in the Barnsley match. I think he's pulled off some other brilliant saves as well. So, you know,
I'd like Adam to explain his comment on our WhatsApp chat about a Bishop.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's the big thing because Adam, I'm taken with Bishop. I think he's great. One thing I know he's not doing is any kung fu kicks outside the area, getting himself sent off.
No, that's true. That's true. No, it's just at the Reading game, he made some really poor sort of kicks and it sort of stressed me out. And I was just like, he's making some silly little mistakes for kicks. And I think, yeah, for that game, again, it was some silly mistakes and I don't quite know what that's about. So it's just, he's doing things that I find like slightly stressful in terms of their risky moves. And so that's why I'm not as excited. I think he's a good goalie, right? But I just think you have to make some really intelligent decisions, and I felt like some of those are risky decisions that caused us two goals. I mean, yeah. I think Johnson should have probably booted the. Watching that other goal again, I think Johnson probably should have booted the ball out of the pitch for a corner or a throw in instead of trying to shield it back. So I think there was a bit of a miscommunication there. I don't know what that was about. He just made some weird kicking decisions that were not very good at Reading. That I thought, So
I'm, dear listener, yeah. I think Adam's more stressed out about the fact it's the start of a new academic term.
Listen.
Rather than listen, anything else relating to football.
Listen, Mark, the man has stress. He just, when you don't sit in front of him, it is watching a football match, he's just like, I can feel his stress. He should actually be prescribed Valium before watching any football, is how I feel that Adam has to get through games.
I think I totally agree, Matt. You know, obviously, he's just in front of me as well, so you kind of... You know what I mean? I mean,
he's a stressed man. So anyone making any mistakes is just going to stress out about even more. But I would say that probably at the start of last season, I don't think many of us were particular fans of Goodman. I think there was cool with it. There was cool within the fan base to move on. Whereas
to send him back to Palace.
Yeah, exactly. That was really the call coming up to the transfer window. In actual fact, that was the thing. There were the people were saying, "Let's send him back to Palace and get someone else in." And his second half of the season was great. I think giving him enough time under Bezos' tutelage, I think he's gonna come good. And I know he was well thought of at Man United. You know, De Gea's follows him and is really sort of like. Saw something in him, so it wouldn't surprise me. I think he's going to come good, and he wants to learn. And you're going to make mistakes. He's still quite young. You're going to make mistakes, but I think he's going to end up being a great thing. And as for transfer windows, great. This one's closed. We're already looking forward to the next one, Adam, aren't we? What's happening with the We Are Wimbledon fund? Because you know, I noticed that was as soon as the window closed. That was the first. It was the first X comment I saw.
Yeah, well, it's going well, you know. So, yeah, if we want to sign some amazing people, then everyone who listens to the podcast, which it's got to be more than one, they need to sign up to a monthly subscription for the We Are Wimbledon Fund, and then we'll be rocking in January. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get some people on to talk about it later in the season. But it's there's stuff happening, it's going well, yeah.
I mean, again, my sense is that coming up to January... you know, that's when we're going to start. People are going to start wanting to put their hands in their pockets to sort of help out. I feel that this is too far away.
It's early, but you do need that momentum, don't you? People need to know it exists, it's coming, etc.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone's. I think some of the team were a little bit stressed that it was a bit. It slowed up, but I think everyone has kind of realised it's a long game, and so I suspect we'll see some exciting stuff towards December, etc. So
Yeah, I'd have thought so. So,
I think it's a great Christmas present, isn't it? You know, a great Christmas present. Give some money to the club, you know, whatever. Yeah. As I've donated £100 towards getting a new player.
Yeah, there you are. So that's it. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, like people buy goats, don't they, as Christmas presents?
They buy goats.
Yeah, you know, you give a gift of a goat or something to someone, don't you? You like sponsor an animal when you give it. Yeah, you give it as you sponsor it, and then you give it a thing. So that's
one.
The thing.
I adopted a camel.
Yeah, that's fine. But I thought you were talking about actually getting a real animal and like having
sponsoring
a goat.
Yeah, so you can sponsor, like, it's almost like sponsored play. You give it, and then maybe at Christmas time, you get a little certificate or whatever it is. And also, because the word goat is like goat, you could be sponsoring the next goat, you know?
Okay. I'll make a note of that. We're going to have to do a goat video.
So, yet again, I'm giving all these things for free. That's what I'm saying.
It's stored. There's going to be some goat memes.
Coming up to Christmas, give the gift of a Wimbledon goat. But the other thing is, so that's great. We've got time to build that up, and it's going to be exciting coming up to the season. Hopefully, we'll raise enough money to, if we need to, get a player in. Maybe we'll be in a, you know, stay in this position, which will be great. The thing that worries me a little bit is that, you know, we've got the DTB elections coming up, and people. You have to realise that the deadline for nominations is this Sunday. It's the 7th of September is the deadline for nominations. And I don't, I mean, I've not heard much of the way of chatter, but maybe I'm not in the right WhatsApp groups or right things. I've not heard much chatter about people looking to stand. So I'm interested to know that people are standing.
Hey, Mark, should we nominate Matt?
Fuck off.
You can't nominate people if they don't want to stand themselves.
Yeah, there you are. You see?
As I said before, you know, it's a very worthwhile thing to do if you have the appropriate time to do so.
I know Matt's Bonds Trust member. We could do it.
I've spoken to people who stood on the Don's Trust, who've been on the Don's Trust board, and I think it's a marvelous job, and people should do it. Especially if you've a little bit of time on you, and you're really committed to the cause or whatever, and you're not involved in a podcast. Those are the requisites. So if you
simple things, yeah,
if you, yeah. But
there's definitely been less noise about people. It feels not that I'm looking at a bunch of stuff because I'm trying not to look at the social media and other things. I get a bit on the Discord, but I'm not seeing anything on there. It definitely feels like it's been a lot quieter than previous elections in terms of people suggesting they might be doing stuff, but then maybe we're just not looking anymore because...
Thinking of standing, I wouldn't make a big deal of it either.
I think at the moment it is totally because we're doing well, and it's only when we do badly that everybody starts to stand, and this is probably the moment when people should stand. To build on things. So, you know, and I'm a massive believer that we really should be getting more diverse people on the board. You know, it's been a long time where we've basically had an almost entirely, you know, male board or kind of male dominated board. And I'd like to see a bit more diversity, please.
I think, I agree with you, Nada. But I think the issue is how much time, Mark, because that's what you found for you. It takes up a lot of time. So I don't know whether it
took more time than I thought it would. My specific issue, well, it wasn't an issue, but the general circumstance of my particular perspective was I had the time when I stood, and I had the time during most of the time when I was on the board, and then I changed jobs, and I didn't have the time. And that happens to lots of people. You know, you take different jobs, and you're in the honeymoon period, a new job or whatever else, and that's obviously the focus you need to do and you should have from a, you know, straightforward perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say, but the thing we haven't heard a lot from is the current Don's Trust board, and I think they should... I would have liked to have seen more comms about what they're looking for, what the kind of commitments are, just some concrete stuff, because Mark says, yeah, I thought it was the same amount of hours it became, but I don't really know what those numbers of hours are. All I know is that's too many for me. But it's like, and they mentioned they had some meetings and whatever, but maybe some concrete info so people know what they're stepping into might help.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I remember one of the situations when I was halfway through my tenure, and we talked about people on the Don's Trust board, which one or two did, actually reaching out. And I think Kevin Rye did something when he stood down.
Yeah, no, he did a really good thing.
Talking about the experience of what it's like being on the Don's Trust board.
Yeah, his was really good. Those articles were really insightful and actually helped me to understand some of that stuff. And I do know that in other chats, like Martin has said to anyone, if you're thinking of standing, I can give, you know, I can tell you what I've been doing, how I've been seeing stuff. So that's cool.
But do you know what? That's an interesting point, Adam. That's an interesting thing. I think what would be quite cool, and it might be too late now,
sure,
would literally to have a little make a discussion on Thursday or Friday this week, where someone can join online and ask questions of the current DTB members. So if there were some DTB members that were around, that were available, it would be good to actually get them and have people and do a Q&A so that the people can ask, what is it like being on the board? What can I expect? You know, all those sort of things. I think would be a useful thing to do.
And I know they've been testing and checking out some live stuff on Discord, so you can do live chat on Discord. But then they were running a test, but I can't remember. I'm in the test. I said I'll be in the test group, but I can't remember when it's running. I might have missed it. But there's definitely opportunities to do that. It would be on Discord, so you'd have to be on, like, I don't know, Matt, if you've managed to get on Discord yet. But
I have got on now, yes.
But that's part of it. I mean, because originally Discord came out of a live chat for when you're playing video games. That was its original thing. and it's subsequently moved to more text chat and whatever. So it's certainly possible. But yeah, it might be a little bit too late.
What obviously we want to avoid is the very typical British attitude, which is to the elections, it's nothing to do with the John's Trust at all, which is people love to snipe about whatever the circumstances, like the state of the country, without getting political.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't actually necessarily bother to walk around to the local school or scout hut or wherever their polling booth is on election day, local election, let alone national election, to actually cast their vote one way or the other. But then they still complain. You know, my logic is always, I don't actually care what anyone votes specifically in any particular election, whether it's Don's Trust or anything political, because if you do so, then you've got a democratic mandate to use it. If you don't use it, then you can't really complain if whatever the situation or group or organisation, or in this case, obviously, the Don's Trust, turns out or ends up having members or elected board members that you don't necessarily approve of because you haven't done anything about it in the first place. While totally respecting, there will be many, many thousands of Don's fans out there who would love to get involved but can't because they don't have the appropriate circumstance, or they don't necessarily want to be involved in that type of membership board, because if you haven't done it and you're, I don't know, in the 30s or 40s or whatever, then there's a reason you haven't done it. It's because you haven't necessarily wanted to step above the parapet in any way, and no one should be blamed for that either. Some people are just not cut out for such things.
I was going to say, I think it will be super interesting how many people stand and what happens, and I think if it's not a ton of people, etc., I do think we need to think slightly differently about how many people we have on the board, how much time commitment. Is there another model where we can engage more fans with less commitment? Is there more cooperative options? Is there ways that we can do something slightly different? Because I think if we don't see a good number and then we don't see an increased voting turnout, then potentially I think we should think slightly differently about how we model the way the Don's Trust board feeds into the PLC board, feeds from the fan base. Actually, I think maybe I know they're doing a load of work on the constitution, but I think maybe it might be more than that. Actually, if we don't see that, and that might be something.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about having a reduced number of elected people, and then maybe having people that are co-opted on from areas like from DLAG or from Wish or the foundation, you know, or maybe even someone from the local council, gets co-opted on. So
spinning up I hate working groups, but even spinning up groups to do certain things at various points, calling on the wider fan base, because also then that demand dismantles the cliques.
We've done that before. So we've done that before. See, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think Matt's right on having specialist roles within the board, because you need to kind of have that different set of skill sets. So you need to have particular bits that are essential. So if that person doesn't get elected on, then, you know, whatever you do that. I mean, the Exeter model is the kind of one where you have, I think, four generalists who are elected on, and then you have four other roles that are specialists in specialist areas. So you have to have like a certain qualification to be getting that board role, and I quite like that one. The other thing I think is, and I'll go back to something I've mentioned many a time, is I still think we need a volunteer manager, because you need to have that kind of ability to look at what the remit is, proper definitions of that. And that would include, I think, also the Don's Trust board members. So you have a proper understanding of what's involved. And, you know, there are people out there, that's their skill set, that's their job. I mean, Wish have a brilliant volunteer manager. That's the sort of person that should have been doing stuff for the club. And I think that's the thing that I still think is, considering our mentality, where we've come from, that's what I think we really should be pushing for.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's the trouble is getting people on these boards where there isn't money. So, you know, people have to give, and then people are giving up a fair bit of time. But, you know, it will be interesting to see what happens and how many people stand. We'll know those figures hopefully by the time we do our next pod, if not definitely the one after that. But yeah, so anyhow, if you are thinking of a stand, please do. We would love different representation in there, and I think there are some wonderful people around this club who could give so much. So please do support your team or just host a podcast. And I think that there are now that many AFC Wimbledon podcasts because people are thinking that's the excuse of getting out for standing. Anyhow,
there's loads of blooming vlogs, isn't there? There's more coming out all the time. I can't keep
up
with them.
You can't move from. In other DTB news, you know, just in case people know that there was the vote, wasn't there, recently about giving them the more shares for the Dons Across the Pond. On the DTB website, you're shown that those resolutions were passed resoundingly, 95% in favour of resolution one, 93% passed resolution two. And this is without properly understanding what the resolutions meant. So I thought that was very good of us, to be honest with you. So that was good. I'm interested. There were 85 people who were against resolution one and 111 against resolution two. And there were some abstentions as well. But anyhow, it passed. There are now new shares. So now the Dons Across the Pond have got shares in AFC Wimbledon, which is fantastic.
And it also means that those people who have bonds can convert them to shares if they want to, all the way down to the 75% plus one thing. So that's a good thing. It means that less work has to be done to encourage that, because there's loads of bond redemptions that are coming at various points, apparently. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, they've done some work on those bond retentions. It was on Don's Trust website, I believe, recently, which basically was saying that they had contacted a number of people who are in line to redeem bonds in 2025, and a number of them had already agreed either to roll over or some had actually converted into shares, which obviously, as Adam says, because we have the facility to do so now, then that's not just going to help in terms of admin, it's obviously going to physically help in terms of not having to pay the money back. So
yeah. It's all we're getting there, guys. We're getting there, and I think it's fantastic. Again, I think one of the things that will come up is the 50 plus one that will come up again soon, I would have thought. That's not going away. That just some other little bits and bobs, and then people jump in if you've got some other things to say. But I noticed that there's the Merton's Big Sports Day. I wonder if there's gonna be an egg and spoon race. That would be interesting. It's this Sunday, the 7th of September. So basically, get your nomination into standard the DTB in the morning, then from 11 till 5, go to the Merton's Big Sports Day. You can see some of the players. And there's also the League Two trophy will be there as well. Retro shirts. I love this when they do this now, because this just is how old we are. The new retro shirts have come out.
Tiny. Yes.
Core.
Oh, core. Sorry.
Yeah, the 95-96 shirts with LNX in the blue, white and red. I do like these. No. And these are the ones where they've got the shaded Wimbledon badge on them, and it was a great season, 95-96, and I'm pretty sure I have that shirt hanging in my wardrobe.
Mine's in the shed, in the box. Yeah. Dear listener, you can't see the look of absolute horror on Adam's face, because he realizes that he cannot actually restrain himself from buying one.
He's gonna go out and get one.
Shop the 95-96
in the shop,
Interestingly enough, as modelled by Hippolyte and Harbottle and Orsi.
Yeah.
Which is a strategic choice, obviously, you'd imagine, of the club model and stuff. So.
What's the core? I don't remember core. I remember the rest of the shirt, but I don't remember the core.
They actually did a load of our kits. Anyhow, £55 each. So that's...
I've definitely got one of the blue ones somewhere.
That's 165 to you, Adam.
No, because you had that Elenox...
It's like Blind Houses of Monopoly.
It was quite fluffy, though, wasn't it, Elenox thing originally? I wonder whether they've done it the same. Because it was kind of like, debossed?
Is that going to stop you buying, Adam? Let's be honest here.
No, it's not, is it? I mean,
they haven't got, I can't see long sleeves though, so you know.
Oh my God, how's it going to survive? I have a serious point to raise.
Oh yes, okay. So,
damn, that dark blue one is good.
The virtualist trophy game tonight,
yeah,
which we're not talking about, is obviously not going the way we wanted to results wise.
No. Considerably.
Neither did the Reading game, so that obviously is two kind of black marks against the supposedly the reserve squad, B team squad, the backup squad.
Yeah.
In addition to that, Osman Foyer, interestingly enough, has made a cameo appearance. Hutchinson hasn't appeared at all season, so that is starting to look like, unfortunately, even though we're only 6 weeks or so in. Question marks, I guess, will already be raised as to whether or not, even if he is, you know, your reserve for the back five, then is he actually going to be fit enough at all to be able to be part of that? It makes me think back to last season when James Ball actually played quite a lot of the kind of autumn-winter period as an integral part of the point at that time with the back three, which I guess is what we want Bauer to be this season.
Yeah,
and he's got to get match fit, and they've got two of these games, I think, in the next couple of weeks in the Virtualist Cup. But actually, this would be three defeats in a row by the look of it, which obviously isn't great, even though two of them are in pointless cups. No one ever wants to be in any kind of losing run. The interesting thing for me is my fear going into this season was not about whether we'd keep clean sheets or at least keep tight at the back. Is whether or not we'd play expansive enough football, because that's not really in Jackson's overall demeanour, or it hasn't been until this season, to play expansive football. He'd much rather keep things at the tight and try and nick one. Now we're playing more expansive football that obviously is leaving us open at the back, like open to the type of break that Barnsley made and obviously Bradford made on us a couple of times, and Bradford scored, whereas Barnsley were rather more profligate with their finishing. So the question is, actually, are we at the expense of looking better moving forward and giving the likes of Marcus Brown free space to get in that hole, as they say, and actually run at defences at number 10? Are we actually leaving ourselves far too open to counterattacks? And as a result, are we turning into a bit of a lower league Kevin Keegan's Newcastle?
Well, it's interesting. I'm not entirely sure. I still think we're quite solid at that. We're still quite solid at the back. Jackson's always been about counter attacking, so getting up as quick as we possibly can, so breaking. We're never playing about at the back, are we? So balls are, even if a ball goes in our back three, it goes quickly to Reeves or someone midfield and go up. So we're trying to get up as far as we can, but we're quite happy to sit back and then hit people. But you're right, Mark, the games have been entertaining. So we are going, but if you sit back, we would be overrun. You know, if you just let people come onto us all the time, we would be overrun. So I think he's doing the good thing. In actual fact, it's probably what he's doing is defending from the front, if you like. So like pressing as far as we can and letting people, you know, have the ball in certain positions where we're happy for them to have the ball in wider areas, hoping that crosses coming in, we can deal with crosses. I mean, usually if people are coming down the wing, you'll find that our wing backs and our full backs will come over and stop the crosses. So they're quite happy to let people have the ball out by the penalty area and just beyond. But as soon as it gets to there, we're closing down, and we're certainly not letting people. I'd be interested to know how many crosses have come in from the byline, to be honest with you, from the opposition, because we seem to cut them out quite well. It's interesting where you were going with this, Mark, because my thought on the cups and things like that, looking at the budget, because isn't part of our budget about, you know, bringing cup money in? And I know the bigger cup money comes in the
football
FA
fortune.
Cup. Yeah, football fortune. So we've got knocked out in the second round of the League Cup. I'm not sure now. It's, you know, now we're in a very difficult position to get out of the group of this virtue thing. And although it's not huge amounts of money, I've got the figures in front of me. It's 20K to participate. It's 10K a win in the group or 5K a draw. If you win in the second round, you get 20K. Winning the round of 16, You get 40k. Quarterfinals, you get 50k a win. Runners up, you get 50k. And if you win it, you get 100k. Now, these aren't huge, huge money in the grand scheme of football, but at our level, that's not a bad amount. I guess the thing about it is that, like today, it would be interesting to know how much it cost us to open the ground up, because that's going to cost us a few quid. So I'm assuming that's where that £20,000 goes. It's almost that you get to participate. That almost is for you opening up the ground for those three matches. So,
well, 1,350 fans, fair play to them for turning up tonight.
Yeah. I mean, ridiculous. But yeah, so Mark, going back to your point, I'm not so sure that we're being left so short at the back, because I think we're defending all the way through, if you like, and we are set up to defend, but from back to front. And the issue, I think, has been sometimes we've got ourselves in these great positions, like against Bradford or other games, where we're not converting our chances.
Yeah, Brown scored a decent goal, but also missed a couple of other ones.
Yeah.
Stevens is on a streak, and people say he's a streaky striker, but he's on a streak, so long may that continue.
Yep, totally.
Obviously, Omer's got to chip into that. Hackford scored a couple of very good goals.
Yep.
Does appear to be better off the bench. Don't want to label him an Andy Clark just yet, but his finishing certainly is better than Andy Clark.
Matt, he's a bit of a rough diamond.
But
you have to watch the video.
Yeah. Good old Ray Arthur.
I was going to say, I think the cash from the cup games, obviously we've always said, oh, it's great, it's extra bonus money, blah, blah, blah. But I think just staying in League One, being sustainable there in the long term, is way more beneficial for us than a couple of runs in the cup where we get a few extra quid in. Hopefully selling some players will bring in that money. You know, we've got a few things to pay, but I think the amount of people that we're going to draw to the games, the amount of people, away fans that come, staying in this league, it will sustain us way longer than a couple of random stupid cups, you know.
And actually, that's the same conversation that the likes of Palace are having with someone like Mark Gay, and not bothered about Premier League football at all. But obviously, Joe Lewis is our equivalent of that top quality centre back, who will be out of contract in the summer. You would hope that we'd be in a position to be able to offer him a new contract, and he'll sign it before the summer. Otherwise, obviously, he could then choose to leave for free. However, if he chooses to leave for free and we're still a League One club, then we're in a much better position, A, for it to persuade him to stay, and B, even if he doesn't stay, to get someone else.
Yeah. Is that because I was hearing conflicting reports about this, whether he goes next summer or the summer after. But Mark, you're saying he goes...
I think it's this summer. Well, hopefully it's not the summer at all. We sign him a new contract.
Yeah.
But obviously, exactly. You know, there's lots of reasons why you...
Yeah.
Sorry, what's that message? We will still, I presume, have won more games than Man United, is the message that we've just been sent there. The better a position we're in closer to Christmas, the more likely any players we have coming out of contract this summer will be to want to stay. In simple terms, whoever they actually may be. Because then, obviously, you can base your budgets on whatever you have revenue-wise. What I find interesting, obviously, it's very early in the season. You can't imagine the likes of Plymouth will stay down where they are. But a number of clubs that have had a poor start and already have a -4 or -5 goal difference, which means they're not just getting beat, but they're getting beat by several goals. I mean... Cardiff, for example, we know we're a very good team, and Colwell in particular is one of the best players I've seen down at Plough Lane in League One or League Two for many, many years. And I'm including the Ipswich players that came down in a couple of the other season. But they then went and spanked a couple of teams, and we obviously were second best on the day against them, but we ran them very close in terms of deserving a draw.
Mark, I don't want to, this hasn't slipped my attention, by the way, that about how positively you talk about the Welsh clubs. So for the benefit of our well, I don't think there's a Welsh listener out there. How are you ranking the sides in your favourites? You've got Cardiff, Newport, Swansea, Wrexham.
So, I have to go with the four, Wrexham are definitely bottom.
Okay,
for lots of different reasons, and nothing really to do with the. I had a stand-up row with the Wrexham fan before the game against them a couple of years ago. because he couldn't believe that I didn't want their type of fortune, in inverted commas.
Yep. Yep.
Well, my wife's family are from Newport. My family are from just outside Cardiff. And my
son's, making sense.
Son, my son supports the rugby team from Swansea. That's because he didn't check first and he thought that they were the rugby team from Newport. So if I had to rank them, and our eldest child is at university in Cardiff. So actually, if you ask me to rank them, Cardiff first and foremost, mainly because it's got the best Welsh cake shop in the world.
Yep.
And a really great secondhand record store called Spillers Records, Morgan Arcade, Cardiff. Get down there.
Yeah.
I will be actually taking some time off and going to the away game, even though it's midweek, because Cardiff is a great place to go for the afternoon or the day or however long you can choose to.
Well, I think a few of us are going to do that. Some of us have got jobs where you can't, but yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So you're going Cardiff and then what? Newport, Swansea.
Cardiff, Newport, and then Swansea.
Cardiff, Newport, Swansea, Wrexham. Yeah. And because now, dear listener, when he starts talking positively about Cardiff, you'll know why, because he's ranking him. That's the order. There's some heritage there. But I also can see
that Cardiff are throwing money at League One in relative terms.
Yeah. Not at us.
Not at us, obviously. No.
No.
But fair play to Cardiff. They have got five or six academy graduates, including two brothers, in their squad. So, you know, fair play. I don't want to go to Cardiff midweek and get spanked.
But if
they can run away with the league and leave the bottom sort of eight or nine flailing, and hopefully we're not in that bottom eight or nine, then that's fine by me.
Yeah, we've got brothers on this podcast, so if it's a brother thing, exactly. I think you find that we're up there in Cardiff.
Are you both Welsh international footballers?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, we definitely are.
Yeah. If Joe Lewis gets called up, right? Just because he's called Lewis, it's not a relative of yours, Mark. Don't start claiming him.
He's from Swansea, actually. So, yeah.
Oh, I could see you coming in with short shorts.
I wish.
It would not be a good sight, Matt.
So
it would not. It would not be a good look. No.
Is there anything that we need to be aware of football governance wise? I'm drawing this to. I'm giving you the last to.
And also, Niall, the thing is, there's an insane amount of money that's just been spent on Premier League stuff, which looks insane. And a few people are pointing that this is a tipping point of potential insane disasters. So I would be definitely interested to hear.
Okay, so there's two things here. One of which, on the football governance, that comes into play, becomes a legal entity supposedly by the 1st of November. All clubs are going to be having a big consultation meeting in mid-October to look at the state of the game report and a potential governance code, which would be really interesting. Hopefully the state of the game report is going to include stuff about the consequence of financial distribution, which is really important. So those two things coming in. Which would be really good. On the 3 billion, which is the amount of money that's spent in this transfer window, one of the things in the original fan led review by Tracy Crouch was the introduction of a transfer levy, which would have put 10% on any transfers between Premier League clubs and between a Premier League club and an overseas club. So there would have been a 10% extra, and that 10% would have then gone into financial distribution within the football pyramid. So that's effectively could have been a £300 million windfall for the football pyramid, which is one of the things that was originally mooted. The Tories, when they took the that particular paper forward at that time, ditched that particular recommendation, and Labour didn't reintroduce it. We mentioned that, fair game, when we were talking with the DCMS, when they were looking at what they were doing. And that is potentially something that could be used in, it would be a Treasury, not a regulator thing. So the Treasury could potentially introduce the transfer levy, which was mooted, say, by the Tories, Tracy Crouch. So there is precedence there, and it's something that Fair Game has always backed, the idea of that transfer levy. It is something that we may potentially call for again at some point, particularly considering how ridiculous this particular window has been. But that is, you know, true. So, you know, we would like to see 10% levy redistributed throughout the rest of the football period.
That is very interesting. No, I mean that would make a huge difference. I mean, I'm thinking in the art world, there's similar conversations about auction houses having levies on it, so that money could be used to support community arts projects. It makes complete sense to me. And who's going to notice that? Really, the amount of money that's being thrown around. If you have a levy, and that levy is then, I mean, it's not going to make any. It's, you know, if you're talking about that sort of figure, it's not going to make huge differences, is it? Really. So,
yeah,
wow.
I mean, the thing is,
that is
is
very
that
interesting.
What you've done there, Matt, is you said it makes an awful lot of sense. Therefore,
yeah,
you see what you've done there.
I know.
You've also suggested investing in the arts, which clearly is no one wants to ever do, which is completely backwards nonsense. But there we go.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are some good people out there. Right. Well, chaps, listen, I want to draw us to an end, but as we draw to a close, I will. I want to quote. Hopefully one of our dear listeners, the wonderful Kent Womble, Ray Armfield, reporting on tonight's match, says at full-time, 1-5, we made 11 changes, Stevenage made 10. But while the visitors looked like a team, we looked like we met each other in Lidl's car park at 6:30. If any of ours wanted to impress ahead of Saturday, it was a wasted opportunity as Patterson, their number 44, ran us ragged all night. Thanks for that concise. I do love Ray's comments on X. Thank you very much.
I'll just say
that,
one thing on that, Matt. If they did meet in Lidl's car park, I can strongly recommend the chocolate brownie, which our family has done a big brownie test of all the brownies that are available from all various supermarkets and their outlets. And the chocolate brownie at Lidl is rated as the number one. So if you are going to go to Lidl, this is all the ads we want. But maybe they ate too many chocolate brownies. That could have been it.
I was going to say, based on the final score, I'd say that they gorged on every chocolate brownie going.
Or at least they should have stuck to chocolate brownies tonight and given the game a miss. Be interested to see what JJ's got to say afterwards. Right, chaps, thank you very much. Thank you, my friend, Al Cooper. Thank you very much, Dodder. Adam Proctor. Thank you, Tall Mark Lewis.
Thank you, Matt.
Good luck to everyone who's going up to Bolton this weekend. Coming, you Dons. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we